It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital. A programming note. We recorded this first episode of Season 2 back in January 2022, so you might notice some temporal anomalies, such as a lot of talk about the new year and mentions of last summer. Thanks for listening.
Today we're reading Devil May Care, found in the 40th Anniversary Special Prog.
Hello, Simon.
Hi, Edie.
How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while.
Hello, irregulars, and hello, welcome regular. Back. Nice. Yes. To the great Dante read through. Anything happen to you over the summer, Simon?
Yeah. I mean, we've been away for 6 months, and normally podcasting, it's like, yeah, people are away. Oh my God, we just couldn't get to it. It's like, I was physically stopped from being here.
Yeah.
Physically stopped by a government.
For a minute there, it felt like we'd never get back to doing this together.
I thought we're going to have to do it virtually from separate continents.
Yeah, which is just sad. We last left Dante crying in the rain over Jenna.
Yes, we did.
And then a few months later, it was me crying at the airport in Nice.
Nice airport, I know.
After being told you weren't allowed on our flight home.
And it was such a sunset. Sunrise. So it was such a sun. I've got this amazing photograph of the sunrise in Nice.
Oh, yes.
After
that's
I left
the sunrise. Yeah. Because we had a very early flight. We were there at like 4:30 in the morning arguing about your visa.
And I left you there and we were kind of like,
oh.
And I walked away and it was like this amazing sunset. I'm going, sunrise. And I'm just like, oh, that's so poetic and poignant. I'm like, fuck. Damn.
Actually, you're thinking of when we actually parted. I was talking about crying in the airport when we first found you weren't going to be able to go home with me.
I was a little
teary-eyed when we kissed goodbye through the mask, but the real weeping.
We should explain this to people because this is
confusing. Okay, so, well, let's start. All right.
Yep.
So we had this wonderful anniversary trip, which we wrapped up episode 17 of the podcast.
Yes, we did.
Talking about how we were going to take a break of a few months and we were going to be back in the fall was the plan. And we were going on a long delayed honeymoon.
Yes.
And what were we doing on our long delayed honeymoon?
We were going to get a car and we're going to drive around Scotland, see some of Scotland, which I have not really seen since I was a very small child. And then visit distilleries, because that's a thing we're into.
We were
going to do that. We did that. Everything went splendidly.
It was glorious.
There was some.
The weather was incredible.
Minor hitches, because I haven't had British. I haven't really been in Britain for a long time, and I didn't have a drive. My driving license.
He had
was
a
the
paper
old,
driving license.
Yeah, it was the old paper driving license,
which had been issued in I think
86.
It was like 80 something. It was like dot matrix printer.
Yeah.
And you showed me this thing, and I was aghast that this would ever be accepted anywhere as a form of anything.
Yeah, it's been a while since I used that. It has to be said.
And so, but, you know, we got it together.
Yeah, we did.
You know, you can get your driving records online and use that paper license with the online driving record.
The UK government's online portal and services are really a marvel. They're very good and easy to use. By and large. Having dealt with a lot of the American ones recently, the British ones are far superior. So
congratulations,
BritishGovernment.co.uk or gov.uk.
.uk.
Well done.
I was definitely impressed.
Yeah.
And we were able to rent a car and we rented our car.
A Kia Ceed, by the way, which I recommend. If you want to buy a small, comfortable family hatchback, Kia Ceed. remarkably
good. We are not getting paid for this.
No, we're not getting paid, I wish. But yeah, no, it was surprisingly good. I was impressed by that.
It was a great little car.
Yeah, it was a great little thing.
Sally Tomato.
Because
she was red.
That's what we called her.
And she had great sat nav.
We did 3,000 miles in that car. We did Isla. We did
Harris,
Lewis. We went up the West Coast, up the North. We went up to Handa Island off the Northwest. Mm-hmm. And then we did Orkney.
Orkney. Yeah.
And then we came back down again.
And then we went little places along the way. We went to Oban. We went to Scowry.
Yes, we did.
You know, which is
and
why
then we went down to the East Coast, to Lossiemouth, and we did a bit of the Spey Valley distilleries.
Yes, that was post-quote honeymoon where I was working
extended,
remotely during that.
Working remotely, ladies and gentlemen, from a distillery in
Don't
Scotland.
Say that like it has air quotes. I actually did work.
I know. I'm not. Listen,
you
I'm just
said
saying,
that like it had air quotes.
It's
working
a
remotely near
it's
a distillery.
It's a wonderful world that we live in. That these things are possible.
It was a really... And we got to see all these places from your childhood.
Yeah.
So you want to tell our listeners a little bit about how you grew up? Just a quick pitch of that, because I feel like it's interesting and you don't really talk about it that
much.
Is it? Yeah, it is interesting.
I know. I mean, I grew up in the Highlands of Scotland and Lossiemouth on the East Coast.
But that was after you came back from Canada.
I went to Canada for a few years with my parents
because your father was a doctor.
Yes, and couldn't get a job in Scotland because he was like just graduated doctor. And he decided to emigrate to Canada, or we decided to emigrate to Canada, and lived in Canada for 3 years until my mother had a screaming fit and said, nope, we're not doing this, we're going back. So we went back to Scotland.
It's like real boring and remote out there in Nova Scotia
in the
70s.
Yeah, you think that Scotland, remote Scotland, is far away from anything, but Nova Scotia in the 70s was a long way away from everyone, everything.
So they came back and then sought different places in the Highlands your dad to set up.
Well, my parents were big Highlanders. They really wanted to be in the country. So
they were both born and raised in Glasgow.
Yes. That doesn't mean you're not a Highlander in your soul.
I see.
We went to first to a place in Lossiemouth, which was like transitional because it's not the Highlands. And then a job came up. And then we moved to a place called Laggan, which is on the Spey Valley. Nearest distillery is Dalwhinnie, if you're referencing that.
Yes.
That's where I spent most of my childhood. Yeah.
And so I got to see these places.
We got to see all these places. We drove through all of them. We went to see Lossiemouth, which I haven't been to since I was 8 years old, and I can still navigate it. I can still remember where everything is. It's crazy.
Yes. That was quite a place.
Yeah.
You look around and the horizon is ocean.
Yeah.
Because of the way it's placed, the way it sits. It's like you look up for the horizon and the horizon is divided by a line of the ocean. It's really incredible.
Yeah. And it's just like seagulls everywhere.
Yeah.
Seagulls.
They're real loud.
Omnipresent.
Yeah.
And there's like
they run
dead,
that show.
Dead seagulls everywhere too, because they're just dumb as rocks and they keep getting run over.
Yeah, that was something.
It's like I'd have
that
forgotten
that. That was
all
down
about
by
it.
Wick.
Well, that was up where Wick.
That
yeah,
was
we
Wick.
Went, we, Wick
Lossie
was the
didn't
worst.
Have the dead seagulls.
They had a lot.
They
of seagulls.
Were just loud.
Well,
there
loud.
Were a lot of them.
But
anyway.
Yeah, Wick had a seagull problem for sure.
Yeah. So we had we had a great time driving around the car. You hadn't
amazing.
Driven in
15 years. So yeah, it's
a lot of driving for someone who hasn't driven
well,
in 15 years.
You've got to jump back into these things, really, haven't you?
You really did. some of those traffic circles were
roundabouts.
Intense, the roundabouts, yeah.
Yeah, well, the first ones following my brother back from the car rental place were a bit like, wait,
then there were the ones with
this?
The traffic lights in them.
Oh,
which
God,
was
there's
bananas.
An insane one outside Inverness which has got two traffic lights on it. Two traffic lights on a roundabout. What is the point of that? Why? Tell me why. Would somebody in the Inverness District Council or whoever's responsible
fine
for that.
Fine Inverschnecky person.
Yes, some fine,
tell us
fine fellow from
why you have
some fine,
two traffic lights.
Why do you have a traffic light on a roundabout? It is insane. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So anyway,
I've become one of these people who complains about cars and driving.
So we had a really good trip.
We did.
To end the trip, because as we were ending this like extended vacation, we ended up seeing family. That was another thing about being able to work remotely, as we were able to go and visit your family, because of course Simon being an expat and me being the evil American who stole him away to the United States.
I was already here. You didn't steal me away.
I know, but I like to say it like that. It
You're keeping
me
here.
There you go.
You
See?
Are keeping me here.
See?
That's true.
It is my fault.
It's not.
So we like when we go to Scotland, we are remiss if we don't make some time to see family.
Yes.
So we were able to go around and visit family, which was mm-hmm. wonderful. And then we went to the south of France, where one of my best friends lives
mm-hmm.
With her family. And I had not seen her kids since they were basically babies. And yep. now they're, you know, the middle crazy, school kids.
Crazy little feral French children.
They are wonderful.
They're lovely.
Yes. And Noah and Evely. Shout out. So we had this beautiful idyllic time, and this was leading up to my birthday. My yep. birthday is mm-hmm. September 1st. Yep. And so we were able to have this wonderful mm-hmm. meal in the sand on the Mediterranean.
On the beach,
it was just
at Cap d'Antibes.
It was so beautiful and perfect and wonderful. And this whole trip was so wonderful
mm-hmm.
that the joke then became that we somehow had to pay for having too much fun.
Ha.
That's what people said to me.
That's it.
That the gods were angry, that we were just having too much fun.
We angered the
gods.
It
was too beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were trying to board our flight back home.
Was it 7 o'clock in the morning?
It was not even 7 o'clock.
The Lufthansa desk?
The flight was at like 6, and we were there at like 4.
It was dark. It was dark. And we were arguing with the lady at the Lufthansa desk for about an hour and a half about my visa, which I had. I thought I had. Here's the thing about visas. I had to renew my O-1. I'm in America on an O-1 visa, which is a working visa.
Don't get too in-depth
technical.
On this.
Anyway, but the thing about an O-1 visa is it's given to artists of extraordinary merit, which I like to say that a lot because it feels nice, even though it's not.
You feel good about it.
It doesn't actually have any judgment on my ability, except I was given it to do work in America. So, during the pandemic, March, actually, 2020,
yeah.
And the height of Trump... I had to get my visa renewed, so we've rushed it through with my attorneys. They recommended rushing it through, which we did. Fine, got the piece of paper that said I could go to. Was it the confirmation?
It was renewed. Yeah,
it was renewed.
It said renewal
but
notice.
The thing about renewing a visa is you have to then go to an embassy in another country. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't matter what country, and then get your visa piece of paper. You have to do an interview, and then you get your thing validated. They take your passport, they put a visa in it, and they send the passport back to you. And then you have a visa.
That you can travel on.
Which you can travel on. This, I did not know, because we were renewing the visa, and I thought, well, you know, it's a renewal. I've already got this piece of paper and my thing, and then I got another piece of paper.
We didn't know you had to do that every time.
I didn't realize I had to do that every day, because it wasn't a thing I could do anyway, because it was March 2020.
Right, nobody was traveling anywhere.
There was nowhere to go. We couldn't do anything.
There was a miscommunication somewhere along the line about what this renewal meant. And it turns out that what that renewal meant was that you were legal to stay in the United States. You didn't have to leave the United States in the height of pandemic.
No.
But unfortunately, we did not realize it meant that you couldn't travel on it until you'd done this whole rigmarole.
If I hadn't come, I can't come back. Basically, it meant I couldn't come back. So anyway, well, the upshot of what that was that Edie got on a plane by herself, flew home to her new job. And then I was then left in France. And my attorneys recommended, says, can you travel? And I went, yeah, I can travel. Where do I go? And I thought I was going to have to go to London.
Thus began the Romania gambit.
Yes. Well, the thing about going to London is, like, at the moment, because COVID makes everything worse, is that all the appointments at the embassies everywhere in the world are totally
just backed up.
Right? They're completely messed up. So getting an appointment in London was going to take like 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
So we thought, well, that's not going to work. I don't want to spend 3 or 4 months in London, much as I love London. So what can we do? And my attorney said, can you travel? And I went, yes. So can you get to Bucharest? And I went, yeah, why? He says, because the time in Bucharest to get an appointment is 2 weeks. I went, okay, that's exciting. So I then duly flew to Bucharest and started the process at the embassy in Bucharest, in the US embassy in Bucharest, which was shut down due to COVID as well, like all the other ones. But apparently they were still managing to process visa applications. So I got myself a little hotel room in Bucharest, which was lovely. And I spent 2 weeks just wandering around in between doing bits and pieces to get my visa sorted out. While I was there, of course, there was apparently a lot of other people there. I didn't actually meet up with them, but there was a bunch of other people doing exactly the same thing because Bucharest had a reputation for turning things around quickly.
Yeah, word travels quickly in the visa community, apparently.
As Eurotrash people trying to get into the States. So basically, I had a lovely time in Bucharest, and if you want to, I have huge.
He's got travel tips if you want them, but the long and the short of it is, before we, you know.
So basically, I put my application in, gave them my passport, sat back and waited, got a notification my passport was ready, traveled out to the airport.
I booked you a ticket home. Yeah, we were all excited.
Got the passport, and it said, you have been declined for your visa because you are not a resident of Romania. And I'm like, but that wasn't a requirement last week, but it is now.
Yes.
So literally, there was I heard apparently a guy got a visa approved that morning, but I didn't get it in the afternoon. And literally, it was that fine. Basically, I then jumped on a plane to Scotland, where I then stayed with my mom for a couple of months.
Yeah, you did.
While we went and got a visa appointment in London.
Yes.
And then I went down to London, got that appointment set up, and it was remarkably quick and efficient. And eventually, back in the middle of November, I managed to come back home.
Yeah. It wasn't even the middle of November. It was like November 21st, I think.
Right.
Just before Thanksgiving time.
Long trip.
It was very difficult for us. Yes. I mean, nobody really wants to end their delayed honeymoon with a forced separation from the government. Mm-hmm. That's in a pandemic. That's unnerving. You know,
that was the whole problem. It would have been much more fun if it hadn't been a pandemic.
Yeah. The fact that we were separated and it was like, well, if he gets sick over there or I get sick over here, I mean, we can't look after each other. It can delay things further. I mean, it was a tough time. And here I was back at my really demanding new job that I can't actually talk about, but I work for the government now.
So you work for the government.
It sounds way more exciting and like Jason Bourne. I work for the government. I can't talk about it. It's not like that.
She's the man now.
I'm not. I do some government things, but it's all very normal government stuff. But
so,
it was a tough thing to do without you here.
Yeah, sorry.
And
about
you were away, and it was very, very hard.
It would have been much harder if it wasn't for the wonder of the internet.
That's true.
And Zoom and Skype and all these things.
But this is our story. We thought we'd bring you into this.
Yes.
Hopefully you haven't fallen asleep yet.
We decided to do a little opening gambit in our. We're going to start recording the war now. But rather than start with the war, because that's a bit of a bummer after all this, we thought we'd do something, a story, the Nicola Dante story, which is actually the last one published, which was Devil May Care, which was published in the 40th anniversary Prague, because that story is actually slots into the timeline almost exactly just before the war.
I mean, it's that's not true, actually.
Kind of. 2027. It's
I
just
looked
a little,
it up.
A little bit before.
It's 20...
Anyway. The war, when
it's
the war
2667,
right.
And we left Dante and Jenna in 2669, so it's actually
two years earlier.
But this is a year after, I did look this up, is a year, roughly a year after Dante and Jenna have met.
Right, okay.
Is when this happened.
So this
but we
is
thought,
the height of their sparring.
Yeah, we thought a little bit of happiness, right? Yes. We need a little bit of happiness, maybe you need a little bit of happiness.
And we have a story to go with it.
Yeah, and we're going back in time to where we last...
Yes, because this is an 8-page story that may or may not be a 9-page story, and you don't know about the 9th page.
There's a secret 9th page.
There's a secret 9th page, which you have never seen.
So yeah, so we're going to start here, but we will be continuing on with the war next episode.
Right.
So,
Indeed. Okay.
It's 2667.
2667.
As I said, we were just in 2669, where we left Dante crying in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're roughly 1 year after Dante and Jenna have met, and we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of Vladimir the Conqueror's rule.
This ties into the 40th anniversary
of
2008.
Yes, how fortunate of another 40th anniversary.
Is the Tsar an analog for Tharg? I wonder.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
I've never
idea.
Even thought about that before. Yeah, it's interesting. Could read that
is
as a
Tharg
subtext.
Ruthless enough?
Tharg's quite ruthless.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
I don't really know much about Tharg, I realize.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to know.
There's a lot to know.
Yeah. He's
I mean, I could spot him in a lineup, but like that's pretty much it.
He's a complicated dude.
Okay. But I kind of see him like the like MST3K thing where they have the mad scientists that like torture Joel and the robots by forcing them to watch weird movies.
Tharg does torture robots. That's a thing he does.
So it's, you know, I don't know. He's like forcing us to read 2000 AD. That's like the loose idea I have of
since
him.
Since the beginning.
Okay. So we are in the Imperial Space Egg Palace celebrating this 40th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a rather ornate set of ballrooms and several galleries overlooking these ballroom floors, mm-hmm. where Dante stands a bit apart from a large crowd, mingling guests, and is loudly announcing himself as Nicolai Dante while polishing off a bottle of champagne.
Looks like Dom Perignon, too. I think I read
it. Looks very expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So this is maximum obnoxious Dante. This is like early Tosser Dante. Really, this guy is annoying as hell.
Mm. And there are some interesting people in the background of these crowd scenes, some of which we'll allude to, one of which is on the next page. I don't know if you wanted to say anything else about this,
page. Well, there's a megacity judge in the background there. There is Johnny Alpha there, who seems to be talking to Halo
Jones.
Where's
Johnny Alpha?
Johnny Alpha's there.
Oh, that's Johnny Alpha. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
They're apparently talking to Halo Jones. I was told to put celebratory. It's a celebration of 40 years. So
right.
A celebration
you
of 40
put all
years.
The
so I put some of my favorite 2000 AD characters in there. Yeah. Not all I could have done, but, you know, you can do what you can do.
And one of the interesting people we see on the next page.
Can we point to this lady in the green dress here? Who's who does that look like?
I don't know. She looks super familiar to me.
Yeah.
She does look very familiar.
Yeah. Red head, green dress, nice behind. Can't think who that is.
You know, you didn't even tell me you were doing that.
No.
That you nice just, I just looked
nice
over.
Surprise.
I just looked over on your drawing board and I was looking back at myself.
Yes.
It was pretty cool.
Well, we need a reporter character. This is a thing.
Yeah.
So we need a journalist character. I thought, well, who was a journalist I know?
Yes, the one that you were dating at the time.
The one that I was dating at
yes.
the time.
Yes. Which is very cool. I was very excited that I was being drawn into Dante, I have to say. Yeah. It felt like incredibly special
that
was happening.
That was the plan.
It worked.
Part of my devious plan.
It totally worked. And then we see another person in the background on the next page. Who is Judge Dredd, and Dante calls him a po-faced party pooper, and advances his own theory as to why Dredd never removes his helmet, which is that Dredd can't compete with how good-looking Dante is, so he has to just keep his helmet on all the
time. Well, that's almost certainly true.
Yeah. And so then, who interrupts Dante grandstanding for his crest about how good-looking he is?
That lady in the green dress.
It's Astrid Oblomov.
Oblomov,
yes. Oblomov from the Imperial Times. I'm very excited now. See, at the time, I didn't realize the significance of the Imperial Times and Dante. Now reading through it again, I'm like, oh my gosh, I work for the Imperial Times.
Proper job.
How exciting. Unfortunately, I'm a gossip columnist, but, you know, we all got to start somewhere.
If the shoe fits.
Excuse me. And she's asking him about his relationship with Princess Jenna. And he's sort of coyly teasing that he can give her some juicy, sexy, scandalous details before saying Jenna is besotted with him and is a tigress that he has to fight off. And of course, Jenna overhears this.
I did mention this is maximum obnoxiousness, Dante.
Yes. And she clarifies that any fighting of Dante that has to do with her is her trying to kill him.
Yep.
Not sleep with him. And the reporter quickly switches gears, such a professional, to talk to Jenna, and saying to Jenna, does it bother her that her father is having this huge celebration for himself on Jenna's birthday? What a jerk. Who does that?
Well, we know he's a dick.
I know, but like even in these really petty ways. Wow.
Yep.
He probably doesn't even know it's her birthday, I bet.
Yeah, no.
He probably doesn't even know.
And in the background here, we can see Judge Dredd. We can also see Rojaws.
Rojaws.
Because Rojaws of Rojaws and Hammerstein and Robuster's fame. One of my favorite characters in 2000 AD history. And he consumes the glass that Dante throws in the air. That was one of my favorite characters. Okay, I should point out that the artwork in this was drawn much larger than I did most of the rest of Dante. It was drawn like A2 size rather than A3, which is why I can squeeze in all this little noodly detail in that cityscape up there. I thought because it's only nine pages, I could do it in a larger format. It wouldn't kill me because working that size is quite a drain because it takes a lot.
Yeah.
You've got to fill a lot. You've got to spend a lot of time filling pages that are that
but
size.
But it was kind of exciting because, I mean, a lot of the older comic artists that that were sort of at the dawn of comics, and especially newspaper comics, worked in huge formats. So you're
sort of walking in the steps
of some of your...
It's nice to work large. It's just very time consuming.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good.
But you can see why they did it.
Yeah.
Because it gives you so much freedom. Yeah.
I mean, it's just easier to do like fine detail when you've got that much space to play with.
So then Dante and Jenna banter some, and she reveals that she's been informed Dante was boasting to his brother Andreas that he will try and steal something during this party, and she thinks it's the Fabergé ruby.
Is that a ruby?
She calls it the Fabergé ruby. The only problem is it's this giant sort of Fabergé egg, I guess, made out of ruby.
God knows.
And it's huge. It's taller than all the guests, and it's on a plinth in the center of the room. So kind of hard to steal. And it's we're told that apparently an alliance of smaller houses pooled their resources to commission the egg for Vladimir to celebrate him. And Vladimir lets us know what he thinks of his guests, which is they clearly don't know how to use their money wisely. And he announces that in retaliation for this, he's raising their taxes.
To 25%
until they show they can be more financially responsible.
Wow.
That really struck me as like a Succession moment.
You reckon?
I was like, this is Brian Cox in Succession. Like,
I mean, I gotta say, if there's gonna be a Dante anything, then Brian Cox should definitely play this song.
He would be great, wouldn't he?
Perfect.
Anyway, so suddenly the egg starts to flash and emit a high-pitched noise, and it explodes to reveal a pretty woman in a red bodysuit who's definitely not Scarlett Johansson, surrounded by an army of cybernetic arachnoids that seem to also kind of look a bit crab-like, like they have these sort of like fighting pincers in the front.
Yeah. Well, they need to have something to fight with.
Apparently, this is Natalia Rostov. No copyright infringement.
None.
I want to be very clear about that.
None.
The Scarlet Spider, a former agent of Smersh turned assassin for hire. Why do I know Smersh? Where is it?
James Bond reference.
Ew, there it is. Yeah. Okay.
So Smersh,
I was like, I don't think it was in Dante, but that's very familiar.
Smersh is the Russian sort of the Soviet era dirty tricks espionage organization.
I see. So it makes perfect sense for this Scarlet Spider, who's definitely not Scarlett Johansson.
I think it's counter-espionage, yeah. So Smersh was counter-espionage. It was something like Death to Spies, it means in Russian. I can't remember exactly, but yeah.
So she is pointing to Vladimir and telling him she's there to kill him. Not subtle, this one.
Can't help but thinking it would be easier to do it in a more subtle way.
Right. But... I mean, bursting out of the egg. I mean, I like the whole like Trojan horse deal, but like you got to feel like there's a better way. But hey, you know, it's showy. It's got that going for it. So, yeah, she's pointing to Vladimir, telling him she's there to kill him. And Vladimir says she'll find he's more difficult to kill. When he's got brave soldiers like Lieutenant Arbatov willing to sacrifice themselves for him. And then he uses a rather surprised lieutenant as a human shield.
Indeed. Yet another one bites the dust.
Another Arbatov. I got to add him to my song.
The Arbatov tally.
And so Dante and Jenna run for cover. And Dante says, "And you thought I was the guest from hell. I'd say your not-so-friendly spider woman takes first prize." And then I love this line from Jenna. "To be fair, Nikolai, you haven't really started drinking yet." It's such a good...
It's a good point.
It's a good one.
It's a good point.
So Dante decides to take on the spider. Clearly not to impress Jenna or anything. I mean, there's just no reason for him to do this.
She seems to have kicked off her shoes. I'm impressed. Jenna seems to have gone into action mode, and she kicked off her obviously nice shoes. And is running
to run away, yeah.
That's kind of like, good detail
like
there.
That.
Well done, me.
Yeah, good job, 2016 Simon.
I know.
Dante swings not from a typical chandelier, but from a floating orb light. This is new.
This is the story of Nikolai Dante. It's like me trying to find things, because Robbie's always like, oh, he swings from something. It's like, where? What? What's it going to flip? I've got to construct these situations where there's a thing for him to swing from.
So it's a floating orb light in this case.
I mean, Steve Ditko never had this trouble because he just like just swung from whatever.
Something off page. You just saw the line, you know.
Yeah, it's like he's, you know, swinging through the city and doesn't seem to. I mean, that's the great. Can I dissipate a pet peeve of mine?
Yes, please.
If you ever go to Queens in New York City,
mm-hmm.
where Spider-Man comes from,
yeah.
there's nothing there to swing from. Nothing. It's all flat.
They do address this in Homecoming.
I know, because he rides on the top of the subway, and it's like, that's fair. But when I first got to...
No, but I mean, he's running through the backyards, and there's just nothing for him to do. He's stupid. Just kind it's of like crashing through really backyards.
It's like, this is my first thought when I came to New York for the first time.
But he's not supposed to swing anything on anything out in Forest Hills. That's when he's like Peter Parker again.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
He's Spider-Man when he's in the big buildings, and then he has everything to swing from.
But Dante gets to swing on whatever's going. And it's like, there's no way any... I mean, having put some light fittings on myself, there's no way light fittings are going to support his weight.
Listen, these are imperial quality.
It's silly.
The blood of so many taxpayers went into those orbs, Simon. Okay?
And he's going to jump through like glass windows too. It's like, people don't jump through plate glass windows.
No,
it doesn't
don't.
Happen. It doesn't. They will die.
Yeah. And half the time, they'll just bounce off.
Laminated
get a concussion.
Glass
yeah.
windows. Like, you can't jump. You can barely drive a car through it. It's that strong.
So he swings from the orb anyway and kicks the spider in the back of her head, sending her spitting blood and sprawling. And then Dante says to our spider, Scarlet Spider, you know, I've got to get a title like that. How about Nikolai Dante, Sex God Swashbuckler? Or Nikolai Dante, the Flashing Blade. These are terrible
names. Well, the
names.
Flashing Blade is actually a reference.
What's that
It's a
from?
Reference to a dubbed TV show that Robbie and I watched when we were kids. It was a swashbuckling European TV show, which was dubbed into English for the children's morning, Saturday morning TV program.
What was it called?
The Flashing Blade.
Oh, The Flashing Blade. Yeah.
I don't know who made it.
So it was like a pulp cereal or something?
I should find out who made it. But yeah, it's a good influence on us, I think. One of the unsaid influences on Dante is The Flashing Blade, because we all watched it.
Okay, Flashing Blade isn't that bad a title. Yeah. Actually, it's just way too nice for Dante. It makes no sense. Sex God Swashbuckler? Really?
Listen, it's Maxima Obnoxious
Nostalgia. I can't.
It's old school.
It's not even good, though. That's the thing.
None of it was ever
it's not
good.
Even but sometimes he's more at least a little attempt to be clever. But anyway.
I think expecting cleverness from Dante is probably a little bit optimistic.
Probably. I don't know what I'm doing. Clearly, I've been away from the podcast for a while that I have any standards where that comes from. Mm-hmm. Okay. So... I lost my place. Right.
Spiders.
Okay, so she sends her spiders after him, the spider lady, and Dante gets swarmed. He just gets engulfed by all of these cybernetic spiders. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly Jenna comes out of nowhere with a sword and punches the spider in the face with the hilt of the sword, which is amazing.
Yeah, the spider lady.
And she threatens her and asks for the name of the person who hired her to assassinate her father, Vladimir. I do have a question here, Simon, about your art.
Okay.
What is this move? What is she doing? She's
no
sort of crouching here, and then she's doing like a limbo.
I don't know.
Okay. You don't know either.
I don't know. It was like she's supposed to go from a crouch.
That's what I was thinking. She's kind of like kicking her legs up, kind of doing that cool flip up, you know, put my hands behind my head and do the like flip up they do in the superheroes.
I think that was kind of the idea, but I kind of fucked it up. I think I fucked it up.
I just want to be fair.
Yeah,
I didn't want
to more of a ramp up to that.
I didn't want to like point it, not point it out because you're my husband.
Thank you. No, it just isn't good. It's not right.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Oh
but,
well, we get the idea.
Yeah.
That's just one panel.
Sorry, folks.
And then, the spider kicks into Jenna's stomach basically from a crouched position.
Yep.
And grabs the destabilized Jenna by the hair, pointing her blaster at her throat and telling her that Vladimir actually wasn't her only target.
Mm-hmm.
So she's after Jenna as well. Dante fights his way free of the spiders and grabs the spider woman and hurls them both. Now here, I have another question.
Yep.
Hurls them both off of a balcony that kind of comes out of nowhere?
Yeah, I know. I didn't establish that.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on here. The action's not well done. I should have like established that balcony in the background.
Yeah, because there are balconies. They're just not on a level with balconies.
It's not good.
And the naked statues with.
We didn't establish them.
No, I did go back and I couldn't find them.
Yeah. In fairness, they weren't established in script, but then I could have read ahead and.
It was 2016.
Yeah.
We had a lot going on that year.
We did.
There was a lot going on that year.
I was, yeah. I know. And I'm a bit disappointed in myself.
Oh, no. I mean, listen, it all looks really great. The background details have fallen by the wayside a little bit, mm-hmm. as sometimes happens in comics. So don't be too hard on yourself.
No, I should be hard on myself because it's a failure. Okay. It's a failure.
Oh, no. So in any event, basically, they both fall crashing from the balcony. Mm-hmm. Dante basically runs up to the spider, grabs her, and runs them both off the edge of the balcony. The spider gets impaled on the giant spear of a statue that's beneath the balcony. Mm-hmm. And Dante just kind of falls to the side.
Yeah.
And Jenna runs over to Dante's prone body and checks to see if he's alive.
There's a lot happening in that panel. It's a 7-panel panel. There's a lot going on.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And he, of course, takes the opportunity to tell her he's too cool to kill, and kisses her.
Yes.
After he's pulling his head up from, like, a bloody pool of blood that he's just spit out, he's like, let me just put my tongue in your mouth.
Yeah. You know, classy guy.
This is real classy. I mean, maybe she likes that sort of thing. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And he then reveals that the bet with Andreas was not to steal the Ruby Fabergé egg, but to steal a birthday kiss from Jenna.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenna is in the midst of calling him a rogue, scoundrel, you know, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Yeah.
Before deciding, screw it, it's my birthday. Let's make out with a dodgy person. It's not like Dad is having any celebrations for me, so I'll just kiss this man. And so she goes for it. And I love Dante's, like, shock surprise. It's like, ooh. Is this consent? Don't know what that feels like.
Yeah,
what a shocker.
Yeah,
and so they kiss.
That may or may not have been the first time they actually shagged. I don't know.
Who knows? We don't know what happened after this.
I don't know.
And they kiss, silhouetted against what looks like the setting sun, underneath a big banner that reads, Diavolo, happy 40th birthday, 2000 AD.
Yeah.
And that is the end of the story. And the end of the 40th anniversary Prague, which I thought was kind of cool that you guys got to end the Prague.
That was nice. It's always nice to have story. That position in the Prague. It's very nice to have that.
Yeah, that was cool.
I was pleased with that story, more or less, except for some of the storytelling, obviously, it's a bit iffy, but anyway.
So that's the end of Devil May Care.
Yes.
The romp.
Yes.
It's
not quite the ending, though, is it? It's not quite the ending.
Well. No, it's not.
Yeah, there's another page.
We're reading a very special copy of this.
Yep.
The
only copy in existence
that's
got all 9 pages in it.
That's got all 9 pages.
Because the last page is glued in.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the benefits of it being the final story in the Prague is that there's this back flap cover.
Yes.
So you can actually put a page on that back flap and the story can continue.
Right.
If you're a crafty comics.
Indeed.
Man.
And so one character from earlier on comes back who just happens to be you.
Yes, the reporter that looks very much like me and now is just totally me.
And then there's another dude who seems to be wearing a kilt and looks surprisingly like me.
And looks surprisingly like you. And they're both looking on, watching this makeout sesh happen, which I like.
Right.
We're just being like creepy voyeurs at the start of this story.
Yes.
And
what does this dodgy Scottish character do?
He basically says that there's something he's been putting off,
mm-hmm.
and that there's something he's been meaning to ask me, and I apparently am trying to feign surprise, because we had discussed at this point.
Yes, we had discussed
the future
at this point.
Of our relationship,
the future of our lives together.
And you say some really romantic things, which I will not reveal.
Super romantic.
They are very romantic.
So romantic.
It is truly beautiful. No, I'm not. I'm not kidding. It really, actually is.
And there's a couple of people watching.
Yes, I love
the
characters who have come to show up to join us for this moment. We have the 11th Doctor, and the TARDIS, and we have Lily, Mackenzie, and Cosmo.
Yeah, in the background.
Have shown up, and then this very dashing Scottish gentleman gets down on his knee and offers me a ring. And the final panel is me pondering my answer with an ellipses.
Yes. So when did you see this comic for the first time?
I saw this special comic.
Yeah.
This special edition in April of 2017.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was In the park.
In Van Cortlandt Park, yes.
In Van Cortlandt Park in the Bronx, mm-hmm. which is a great park that is indeed. A lot of old sort of rambling bits of forest in there.
Yeah, it's the largest park in the New York park system.
It's not.
They've told me it was.
No, they lied to you.
Well, anyway, it's the largest, and it's large parts of it are kind of unmanaged.
But it is huge.
Because, you know, a Prospect Park in Brooklyn is very nice and very kind of well organized. It's done by the same people who did Central Park, but it's less kind of vista-y and organized. It's much more kind of like cute and modern, and then Van Cortlandt is basically like, this is just a big chunk of land with some golf courses and some bits in it, and that's it.
And a big part of the Revolutionary War was fought around there. And
you can get lost in Van Cortlandt Park, which is what we were doing easily, that particular day when we went for a picnic.
Yes, well, you said that you wanted to go for a picnic and get outside and read some comics.
Yes.
And you packed a picnic lunch for us.
Indeed.
And we went out to go for a walk.
And we had a big fight. It didn't go as I was planning.
What's super funny about this to me is that I knew that you were going to do the official proposal because we already knew we were getting married at this point.
Yeah.
But I wanted to have the like pomp and circumstance of a proposal. I just wanted it, you know.
Put the guy through the ringer. Because the pressure's on. You've got to come up with something good. Especially if you're like a creative type and you're supposed to have lots of good ideas. You're supposed to come up with something really creative.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah.
I had no idea how much stress you were under about it. I know. I'm so sorry. And So we got into an argument on
I can't even remember what that was about now.
It's best left to the mists of time, Simon.
Lost.
But the point was, is at a certain point, it was like, oh, should we just bag it and go home?
Mm.
And I said, I took a deep breath and I was like, let's just walk a little bit more. And then we sort of chilled out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm really hungry because we hadn't eaten lunch.
Yeah.
And so you fished some of the nice snack you had in the bag out. And I took a few bites of it. And I was like, let's do this picnic, this nice thing that you're setting up. For some reason, at that point, I still didn't realize that this was the proposal, which is hysterical to me. Mm. That I didn't, it didn't click yet.
My cunning subterfuge.
Yeah. And so we continued on and we found this sort of like hidden kind of woody area and you laid down a blanket and laid out the food and you brought out the stack of comics.
Yes.
To like, what comics are we going to read? And there were all these like dummy stunt comics in there that like were not what you wanted me to read. And then the 2000 AD Prague. And what was super funny is like, I continue to be like a pain in your ass.
Yes.
Because you...
You were horrible. I was thinking twice about the whole thing.
You hand me the Prague and you're like, hey, do you ever read this? And I was like, of course I read the 40th anniversary issue. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we were just at the...
Read it again.
We were just at the missed, con. This you said, I missed something. And I was like, I missed nothing. Because I read your comics like very closely because I care.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I didn't miss anything. And you were like, just look. And I'm like, I didn't. And you're like, read the comic.
Read the damn comic. Jesus Christ.
So I read it and I'm like scouring through this comic as I'm reading it. Like, what did I miss? And I finally get to the final page where I flip it over and I can see there's a new page in there. And I remember that I still read the rest of it really closely.
Mm-hmm.
Before going to the new page because I wanted to make sure you didn't have a leg over on me beyond the addition of the new page.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like...
Yes. Anyway.
What is wrong with me?
So what did you say? How did you respond to my terribly well thought out and romantic proposal?
It was very beautiful and I was crying.
Yes.
Okay. I had tears running down my face.
Yes.
I was crying and smiling and I look up from the final panel of the comic and you were crouched in front of me with the ring.
Right.
And you're holding the ring and I'm waiting for you to like take my hand and put it on my finger. Like I'm waiting for that.
I'm waiting for you to respond to my proposal.
That's but what I'm didn't. Waiting for. I didn't realize that's what is happening. You were just holding it.
Yes.
And I thought you were gonna put it on.
Why would I do that unless you actually said yes?
I said. How did I actually say it? Are you going to put the ring on me, you asshole?
That was the official response to my very well thought out and elaborately drawn wedding proposal, folks. That was what she said. Are you going to put the ring on, asshole?
And you said, are you going to say yes? I was like, of course, yes. I thought it was just like, it was of course.
No, but... it's never of course. You've got to actually say yes. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Anyway. I do not come off sounding well in this story.
Quite funny, though.
Quite funny. We've lost the audience. They're not with me anymore.
No. Now you're the villain of the piece.
I am. Clearly. Uh-oh.
Anyway.
But, no, it was beautiful, and you were... wonderful, and I love you very much, and it was incredibly wonderful and thoughtful, and
it would have been
lovely.
Boring if you just said, oh yes, of course.
I see.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been you anyway.
Yes, it's strange. What's funny is reading this after reading Dante, it's like very Dante and Jenna.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Jenna would be like, you're gonna put the ring on me, you asshole.
You're just trying to cover yourself.
No, I'm not.
Take the edge off it.
No.
Anyway.
No.
So.
But yeah, so that's done this. So that's that was, the story. Now you know.
Now you know the secret.
Now you know the secret story of the 2000 AD 40th anniversary Prague. Yeah. So that I was proposed to.
Yes.
Using 2000 AD.
Yes.
Which strikes me as kind of a great honor considering how influential and important 2000 AD has been to you and your career and your life.
Damn right.
Yeah, it's like a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it through.
You really did.
I thought it through.
You really did. Yeah. No, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate all your hard work on that.
So
moving on from our dreck, I really am wondering how much tolerance our audience has for this.
Yeah, they've all switched off already.
We shall see. Yes. Unsubscribe. Unfollow.
Yeah.
One of the things we wanted to talk about was the rest of the season, obviously. So we had mentioned last time, and some of our listeners had mentioned they were really looking forward to interviews. We're going to try and create a complete archive of interviews with everybody who worked on Dante. Mm-hmm. And we have made a list of folk.
I sent
my first email out today asking about getting in touch with some of these folks.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of want it to be...
We'll do our best.
Yeah, we'll do our best. We are pitching it as a very relaxed chat. So just be prepared that some of these chats may be like 5 minutes. Others of them may be a whole episode. We're leaving it open to the...
Some may be conducted over text. We will find out.
We may do an email interview that we then like read portions of on air. Mm-hmm. We want to make it really easy for folks to participate in this so that we get everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously, if people are keen to come and chat with us for as long as they want, then that's super exciting. Mm-hmm. We want to be respectful of people's time and that this was quite a long time ago for some folks. And
Let them plug their books.
Let them plug their books. It's an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So we'll be doing that. We will lead off the next episode will be the beginning of the war.
Yep.
And maybe a couple episodes in before we can get an interview episode on the books.
Yeah.
That is ahead of us. Mm-hmm. We did come up while we were in Antibes, drinking whiskey and chatting about whiskey with our friends. We came up with an idea for a new podcast.
Yeah, because we don't have enough on our plates already.
You know.
Maybe an occasional. The thing is, this works out reasonably well. This is pretty straightforward for us to do. We thought, why don't we try? Because the problem with doing a Dante podcast is it's pretty much tied to people who have read Dante, are interested in Dante, or want to read Dante. And it's like, that's not a huge number of people, though you are exclusively wonderful and glorious people.
And handsome, attractive and beautiful.
Indeed.
Smart.
So we thought,
why
don't we try and do something a little bit broader than that? Because there's you know, things that we can do to talk about other than Niccolò Dante.
That's true.
And there's things that we've been meaning to do as a couple. And one of them is like read comics.
Yeah.
Because we each have different angles from this. We've come to comics in our own ways. And we all have favorite comics, which the other one haven't read.
Right.
I mean, one of the first things we did as a couple was we bought each other a comic. And I bought you Alan Moore Miracle Man, the first book of. And you bought me Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
That's correct.
By Jonan
Vasquez. Yes. Very formative book for me.
Yes. So that was like, this is good. So we thought we could do
that.
We could do that as a podcast. And because we could tie in another thing, which is whiskey, into that. So we could do like comics and whiskey pairing. which sounds slightly pretentious, but let's just run with it.
We're going to give it a shot.
So we would do an occasional podcast, sort of a regular at the beginning, where we read a comic which is nominated at the beginning by one or other of us.
Yep.
And then we'd look for a whiskey to go with it.
To go with it and talk about why. And we can discuss
the whiskey and the comic. Mm-hmm. And it'd be roughly this format, sort of right about under an hour, where we talk about...
It's very definitive that our podcast needs to be under an hour.
We're going to waste your time if we can avoid it. you know, that would be an interesting thing to do. But
yeah, it'd be a little more accessible for people who aren't quite ready to do a huge long read through, but we still get to talk to everybody about comics and about whiskey, things that we love. Yeah. But... this will not affect our read-through schedule.
Yeah, the read-through takes first priority right now.
We will do this. We are committed to going all the way through with you folks, and we hope that you're excited to come along with us as we go into 2022.
Happy New Year, folks.
Happy New Year, irregulars. We're recording
this on New Year's Day.
Yes, it is New Year's Day. Mm-hmm. And it feels so nice to be back recording the podcast with you again, Simon.
It feels good.
It feels like a really nice return to form.
In our ad hoc recording studio.
Which is our bed.
Our bedroom.
Bedroom with some egg crate stuff on the behind a mic and blankets.
An ancient laptop, which will probably shut down any moment because its battery is totally farked.
Yeah. Apple won't even service this thing anymore. No, it's dead
old.
To them.
It's too old. The only thing it does is record this podcast. That's all it can do now.
They wanted this laptptop to be Logan's runned like 10 years ago. Just keeping it going. But it feels really good. I hope you all have had as safe and healthy an end of the 2021 as you could. Mm-hmm. Please all take care of your wonderful selves.
Look out for yourselves. It's going to be a tough few months while this Omicron thing
works. We all lost
through.
Some people last year, and hopefully there's not too much more of that ahead.
Yep.
We're excited to keep going through the read through with all of you. So thank you for all the support and enthusiasm you have shown to us.
So all the very best.
Yes.
And we will see you shortly.
And we hope that you enjoyed our podcast. Yes. And if so, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can. And tell your friends. Get them on the read through. They can catch up. It shouldn't take too long to play catch up. And we'll still be here. So, you know, they can take their time and we'll still be here making episodes. It's going to take us a while to get through all of this.
Yes.
Please follow us on Twitter at PodTGDR. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Dante Comics, whatever's on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.